Hello and welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, coming up all the way from the southwest of France. And joining me is a great lover of this region and this area. It's none other than Dave McKenzie. How are you, Dave?
Thank you very much. I'm very good. And I am a lover of this region. We're about 140 odd kilometres north of or thereabouts of Toulouse, an area I live, but it is quite different here. And I'm not sure, I can't pinpoint it. It's beautiful though. And it seems like a, well, can I say well-to-do area?
Yeah, is it? I don't know. It's quite interesting because it's, I would say the other side of France, the east part, is a lot more well-to-do. Right. You know, when you go down to Nice and Saint-Tropez, and there's a lot coastal more money.
Always,
it's coastal.
Yep.
But here, it's well-to-do because there is a lot of agricultural businesses around, so the money is around because they make a lot of different produce that goes onto table of people, and anything that goes on the table on a French person brings you money.
And
this is how it works.
And the drive in, that last, well, actually all of the drive was good, very windy. It wasn't good just in terms of time, but it was beautiful, the scenery. And that last hour was just absolutely stunning.
Stunning. Yeah. I know you love a good real estate. I've got a good fact for you in this region.
Yeah.
It's one of the regions that has the most available water per capita. And it's not just because it's raining more, because it's not. You can see how dry. If you could imagine around us.
It's a stinker today.
Yeah, and if you can imagine around us, we are in the middle of a very dusty sort of hot temperature for the city, but it's because the water is well managed from the Lot River and a lot better managed than other regions just maybe 30, 40 kilometers away.
And this is, and isn't there something they're talking about, you know, they've set it up, it's been managed well for a long time, but for the next 50, 60 years, they don't have any issues.
I know, Maka, you're into real estate a little bit. This is where you should be investing.
Oh, so I should be investing here. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
Anyway, let's talk cycling. Someone we should have been investing in for a long time, and Intermarché wanted, did, is Birman Girmay, because this stage win here, third stage win for the man from Eritrea, I don't think I've got enough good words for this. Fantastic?
It's phenomenal.
Phenomenal, it's a good one.
Phenomenal, he is. It's, you know, the first one was history making. We celebrated that. The second one, we went, wow, can he now challenge for the green? The third one, he's now going into a league of his own, and he's extended his green jersey advantage by, I think, exactly 111 points.
Well, he took 75 over Philipson at the intermediate sprint.
Yep.
But then winning that sprint here,
it's
just dominating the whole events when it's a sprint stage.
And you know, to, I guess, put it into context, he's, you know, he's the first Eritrean rider, obviously, to win a stage of the Tour, wear the green, all these historical moments. And he's riding for one of the smaller budget teams. He signed a 5-year contract with them. But geez, I tell you what, talk about getting your value for money. That team is, they. Well, I hope they tear up his current contract and offer him more.
I was in the mix zone tonight, really sweltering, but the part owner of the team was there talking to a French press. And I don't think if he could, I was even wondering, how can he speak with a smile that big on his face? It was just a smiling face.
This is sort of what I love about, I mean, I know all sports, there's stories about this. You know, the movie, which based on a true story, the baseball, Moneyball.
Moneyball.
And I'm sure that there are other clubs, teams that do this. We've seen it in English Soccer League, etc.
Football on SBS. So
And but it's they are. They're the Moneyball cycling team at the moment. And they have been for the last 3 to 5 years. And ever since we sort of started talking more about them at the Vuelta, when they won a stage, took the leader's jersey for a bunch of days. Ever since then, they've just been going on their winning ways. And Girmay has been at the forefront for most of them, but they have had other successes as well. And but this is as big as it gets. You know, this is huge.
The challenge of keeping the green jersey is well and truly on. Is the gap enough at the minute for Girmay to really start thinking, or the fact that he's on super form makes him such a favourite for that green jersey?
Yeah.
Coming to, I was going to say coming to Paris, but not coming to Nice.
Yeah, coming to Nice. The gap's enough, but there's so many variables. So the gap's enough if as long as he stays healthy and stays upright. If he stays healthy and upright, he doesn't even have to have amazing form to the end. The gap's enough, in my opinion, because we've had a bunch of the sprint stages and there's not too many left now. So that's enough. However, you have a mishap, you have a crash. We've seen riders going down with bugs.
We still have the Pyrenees and the Alps to go over again.
So he's got to make it to the finish line. That'll be potentially his biggest challenge. And it won't be a challenge as long as, you know, he doesn't have any bad luck or misfortune. So he's in the prime position to win the green, let's say that.
I tell you what, someone that looked very good as well today is Wout van Aert.
He's Wout coming
van Aert
back, isn't he?
Came on the right of the sprint. He got boxed in by Demar. I'm not sure. I mean, there's probably something that we can talk about. He got boxed in by Demar.
Oh, Demar's been demoted. I was just about to say, I've refreshed.
Here we go.
So he's been demoted.
As we speak.
DQ'd, I should say.
And honestly, quite logically. And not just because Wout van Aert was my pick on this SBS competition, which we don't talk too much about it, but we have an internal competition, of course, and Wout van Aert was my pick. But Wout van Aert today was... He had winning legs. If he wasn't boxed in, he could have properly challenged,
those would-haves, could-haves and should-haves persons?
Look, I'm just reading the race. I'm just reading the race, that's all.
Mate, you and your tipping comp. Like, you're all smug walking around the compound.
Who's the leader?
SBS.
Who's the leader of that
You
TV?
Are the leader.
Thank you very much.
Who gave you some... I gave you the hot tip, though, didn't I?
Don't say that
debatable.
In public.
Oh, no, it's out there. It's out there. No, look, it's good to see Van Aert getting back.
Well, especially he had a rough couple of days.
He actually there was a couple of moments today he didn't look great. Mm-hmm. Early on we didn't think he looked fantastic, but he's come good. And actually just to finish on that note of Demar getting DQ'd, one of our technicians, a Belgian, young Belgian guy, came out with us at the finish line just to basically watch what we do, running around getting the interviews, etc. And so he was watching, we were watching on my phone the last few kilometres. And in the sprint, when Demar moved, he said, uh-oh, he'll be DQ'd for that. So he was onto it, the technician. You didn't have to be Einstein to...
Yeah.
Just because, based off what they've been DQing riders for, especially along the barriers.
Philipsen, on this one, what do you think of it?
Look, he was fourth in the end. Mm-hmm. So... He hasn't had a shocker, but he's obviously not at his prime what he was last year. He's got a stage win, which is good, but he'll battle. He's going to battle for that green all the way for sure, but he's got his work cut out.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk now about the battle at the top of the general classification. Before we talk about the top two, Roglic again, in a crash again.
Yes.
Second day in a row again.
Yeah.
Are there signs? I know you said you shouldn't really read too much into it, but 2 days in a row. He's at the wrong spot, at the wrong position in the peloton.
Everyone talks about it.
I tell you what, one thing, he didn't look good, that good on chasing after as well, because they were not going ultra fast with his team.
No.
And either was he worried? Is it something physically, something mechanically? What happened there? Because you would have thought he would work a lot with lack of better
word. Go full gas.
They will go full gas to bring him back, but it didn't.
No. So what I can tell you now,
he's far.
He's sixth at 4:42. So that's a real shame. I don't like to say, per se, riders crash a lot. You know, people said it about Richie Port when he crashed out of two tours. Look, one of them was partly his mistake on the descent, but it's a really small error. The second one wasn't. So he has one crash that took him out of the tour, and people said, oh, he crashes, he's, you know, can't handle his bike. Garbage. I never bought that. Roglic, I want to say the same, but he's crashed a lot. He has crashed a lot. Yesterday, look, he slipped off. Today, it was bad luck, because I don't think he was the initiator.
He wasn't the initiator,
it was Lutsenko.
But again, it's
like he's in the wrong position.
Exactly. Is it due
is
to
it
placement?
Just bad luck, or
is
I don't
it
know.
Placement? Is I it know. Is it his team around him? But he's changed team and
I don't know. I think he's had a few crashes and until you're in that position, if you've been in the position as an elite rider racing for victory or racing to hold your GC position, it's really hard to, I think, critique or criticise. You know, it could be just bloody damn bad luck, you know, and he's had it for a few years. and that just happens. There's loads of other riders that have had lots of crashes. So, yeah, it's a pity. I feel for him and I feel for Bora, but this is it. You get knocked down, you got to pick yourself back up. Mm-hmm. And they, look, they might reboot and go in a different direction now. Who knows? Yeah.
Could this open up a lot of things for our very own Jai Hindley,
though?
Absolutely. With the Pyrenees opening, the Alps coming up as well.
Yeah.
Do we have to run this hashtag Free Jai? Oh, no.
Oh, not yet, Lorchi. You can start it. I'll sit on the sidelines and see what happens.
It's like the Homer Simpson walking out in the bushes. Like,
yes. Yes. So, Jai, as of now, look, this is irrelevant, really. He's 19th overall, 20 minutes down, so that's irrelevant. But it's relevant because he can go up the road and try and win a stage. Mm-hmm. And being 20 minutes down, they won't let him back in the general classification. That is guaranteed.
Yeah.
But they might let him get 5 minutes up the road, whereas previously they wouldn't have. So this could open the door for Jai to get up the road and maybe go for a stage win.
Let's talk about the top side of that classification. I've got a question for you, Maka. Is there any bigger rivalry in world sport today than the Vingegaard-Pogacar happening? Think about it a second or two. You may have had the Nadal-Federer.
I was going to say, tennis is the first.
I'm talking about today, okay? July 2024. I don't think there is.
Probably not. I mean, and when you say rivalry, what you also mean, tell me otherwise, is it's so tight.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, so tight, the rivalry. They're so evenly matched. There's not much separating them. And, you know, what we're loving right now is 50% probably now are saying Vingegaard's going to win. 50% are saying Pog's going to win. And that's experts, fans, anything and everyone. So that's what we want. That's what we want in at the tour. You know, we don't want the foregone conclusion with 8 days to go. It's not good. It's actually not good for anyone.
Yeah.
And stating the bleeding obvious, it's not good for ratings.
Yeah, it's not, is it? Yeah.
Fans, you're listening at home. You don't necessarily switch off. There's still plenty of great racing to watch. But if the tour's won with a week to go, it's a little bit, okay, now we can just hope for, you know, some exciting sort of stage wins.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you, Maka. Look, stay tuned because we have the great Phil Liggett on the other side of this in this podcast coming up. But before that, I had a quick chat with someone from the town here in Villeneuve-sur-Lot, and Léa explains to us what it means to set up a Tour de France stage for a town like Villeneuve-sur-Lot. And we are here in Villeneuve-sur-Lot, and I'm with Léa from the town, the mairie de Villeneuve-sur-Lot. Hi, Léa.
Hi.
So let's talk about the logistics of this Tour de France. And it's complex to be a stage finish of the Tour de France. The logistics is quite astonishing.
Yes, it's a very, very big logistics. We've been working on it for a very long time. But very short at the same time, because we were thinking of welcoming the Tour de France here in 2, 3, maybe 4 years, and it came in 9 months. So we had to think very quickly. And the ISO teams are amazing, but we have to think about local issues. And yes, it's a big thing. Tour de France is a big thing.
So if we understand it well, and if I understand it well, everything around the race is pretty much guided by ISO, by the Tour de France itself. What's hard is to understand what impact it has on the town, on the people that live on the town. You mentioned of Mike, just the helpers that come and help people that have medical aid every day, or the elders or the elderly people that need help every day. All this needs to be preempted and arranged before, because some of them are on the route of the Tour de France.
Yeah, exactly. We have a hospital here, and old people who have nurses who come every day. Obviously, the traffic is changed today, and people have to think a lot to go to one point to another. It's not as usual. It requires a lot of explanation. So that's a big part. And of course, we have also shows and activities on the side of the Tour de France itself. And that's the city who organize everything. So big day.
So it took you 9 months to be present today. Are you happy with what you've seen today? And I'm sure the people are happy as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really amazing. People are so happy. We have the sun. It's a bit hot today, but I think ISO is happy, and the Villeneuvois are very, very, very happy about it.
I've got one last question. You mentioned to me that the plan at first was to work with Agen, which is not too far away, and it's potentially a much bigger city than this one in size and in population. But then in the end, the finish is here, and then Agen is the start as well. Have you been able to work with them? Is it a joint, in a way, a joint event for the whole the southwest of France? You're welcoming the tour in the southwest, and it's very special in the heart of people, the southwest of France.
Yeah, with the stage of today and the one of tomorrow from Agen to Pau in the Pyrenees, we are the two stages in the southwest. There are no others this year, and it always means something for people here. Cycling is very important for people in southwest. We worked with Agen a lot.
You may understand, but from my French accent, I'm from Paris and not from the south of France. I'm trying to convert the Australian on the regions and what should we eat in Agen. We're talking the pruneaux are very in a region, I mean not necessarily Agen, the pruneaux, but there's the foie gras, there's a lot going on in this part of the world.
Yeah, there's a lot. The southwest of France is the best part and the best place to eat well in the whole world, I think. The pruneau, of course, but the pruneau is not from Agen. The pruneau is from the Vallée du Lot and from Villeneuve-sur-Lot. Really come here to taste it, because you've never eaten pruneau like we make it here. And yes, foie gras, magret de canard, you can, it's really the best place to eat well in the southwest.
You can have a really good time on your plate. Thank you, Léa.
Thank you, bye-bye.
So that was Léa from the town of Villeneuve-sur-Lot. She's elected for the town, and she's explaining how hard it was for them to set up this beautiful setup, actually, here in Villeneuve-sur-Lot. Did you know that they were given, or they were applying for a time trial, and they were told, with the queue that we have, the backlist, or it would be 5 years, it could be 3 years, who knows?
It's quite incredible.
And then they
it?
Got told off, say, and Prudhomme called them, called the mayor and said, I know you like a challenge, you're hosting a finish of the Tour de France in 9 months, are you up to it? And they took it on. And
imagine, what if she'd said no?
Yeah.
Christian would have gone, well, no, actually, you have to.
Actually, it's not a question.
Yeah. No, but it's pretty cool. And it's a cool backstory. Yeah. And they have delivered. Yeah. They deliver. Every town delivers, yeah. Don't they? I think that goes without saying.
100%, Mike. Okay, let's take a short break. And then when we come back, we speak to the greatest, almost, Phil Liggett, straight after this.
Ready to take your cycling adventures to the next level? Since 1975, Jayco has been proudly manufacturing in Australia and is the largest name in caravans, pop-tops, camper trailers, hybrids, motorhomes and campervans. With the largest service network in Australia and unbeatable access to parts and accessories, Jayco is here for you. Cycle by day and relax by night with your fully equipped Jayco to keep you out of the elements. Jayco is built here for out there. Visit jayco.com.au to discover the range.
Get the ultimate Tour de France experience with SBS On Demand. Download the app on your preferred device or connected TV to access the Tour de France hub. Enjoy full live coverage, stage replays, extended highlights, mini stage recaps, and bite-sized stage-winning moments. It's all available anytime, anywhere, and streaming for free at your home of cycling. SBS On Demand.
Welcome back to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. Now, Maka. We have a little treat, yeah? We were able to talk to someone we both love. I interviewed Phil Liggett for this podcast. You did it for the television.
First time I've seen him thus far.
Yeah.
I saw him in his car when we were descending the finish line yesterday. That was the first time I'd seen him. But
I won't tell you where was the first time I saw him this year, because he was just exiting the Port-Loup. But let's listen to Phil Liggett. Here we are in the Jayco SBS Cycling Podcast, of course, with the man, the legend, no one else, that Phil Liggett. How are you, Phil?
How are you?
I'm really good. I'm enjoying this tour. I hope you are as well.
this is a special tour. You'd think after 52, you've seen them all, but every year you see a different one, and this has been simply superb. We are flying through this race.
The question I've been dying to ask you for a little while, you have commentated on every single win that Cavendish had on this Tour de France. How special was this number 35? But also, when you look back, how special is the fact that he reached 35?
It's unbelievable. I honestly did not think he could do it. I thought, approaching 40 years of age, we have the best sprinters this year in the race, and you can count probably 20 sprinters, including Mark. And I thought that surely he can't come up. But you don't know the mentality of this rider, the determination of this rider, the fact that his team is built around him. Remember day one when he was sick physically on the bike, riding minutes behind the riders in the Tour. He was in desperate trouble. I thought, he's going out. He'll be eliminated. On the first day of the Tour de France, he lost a teammate that day with sunstroke alongside him. But he got through to the finish. His team is built around him. Had he retired that day or been eliminated, it was a headless team. There was no reason for them to stay in the Tour de France. So that's Mark. And then after that, I began to change my mind. I thought, if he can recover, he had problems on stage three, the first big sprint stage. He had problems with the last 5 kilometres. Many of them did. But then he came good on stage five. I admit I choked up in the commentary because I was so emotional. But he won so well. That was the old Mark Cavendish. Watching that sprint from the helicopter, he went through that peloton wherever he wanted to go like a slice of butter, and he got over the top of his biggest rival, Philipsen, and took lengths out of him. And let's not forget, Philipsen spoiled the party last year in Bordeaux when he slipped a gear or some messed up his gears. Mark did. Philipsen took out the stage, and the next day Mark crashed. So what a difference a year makes.
Did you prepare specially, let's be honest, did you prepare specially for that number 35? We all knew he could come this Tour de France. If he come this Tour de France, there was no other place he could come. Did you prepare something special for that day?
No, I've always been spontaneous on television. That's the way I work. People think I write what they call ligotisms, phrases, and then say them when they fit them in. That's absolute rubbish. It's what I see on television. That's my picture. It comes to mind. What I see is what I say. But this was special. You know, all those years ago when I saw Mark Cavendish win on Champs-Élysées, I called him the Manx Missile. That name has gone round the world with him. All the commentators use it now. And that's what he rides like. And the Missile was armed and ready when he won that fifth stage. Once he got through the field, he lopped onto that finishing line. That was the old Mark Cavendish.
Quick question for you as well. How are you feel? You've been around the block a little bit. You know, you're by the man with the most experience around this Tour de France. How are you feeling? And also, are you excited by this Tour de France this year? We are, but I'm a bit young, a bit wet behind the ears. But you know it all.
You're only about 50 years younger than me. What are you talking about? I don't feel my age, I'll be honest. I don't act my age, as everybody tells me. I'm always joking with the lads. I've got to stop soon, let's face it, but I don't want to bore all the fans forever. But having said that, I feel good. I came to the start, actually, because, you know, I have a love for Africa, and I did a lot of charity work in Africa before I came to the Tour de France, and I was bitten by a poisonous spider. That was no joke. I spent 12 days on an intravenous drip to sort it out. So even now, when I go around the compound, all the other television networks and the organisation of the Tour de France ask me how my leg is. I thought, I must have achieved something over these 50 years. Everybody speaks to me now.
Yeah, that's really good. How are the rhinos? I know you're looking after them. You do a lot of work back home with them.
We are so happy with what we've done for Africa and the people, because with the rhinos come the help of the local people, because the secret of keeping the rhinos alive and protected is that the people must see a reason for that. So help the local people. If they get money out of it, then they will make sure those rhinos aren't killed. We're having great success. We are over the moon with the way it's going right now.
And I've got one last question about cycling. You're the Bible for cycling. You've seen it all. Okay, this year, we've been saying in the podcast, we potentially have the best lineup for the GC that we have in our own memory. What's your vision on this lineup? We've got 3-4 strong contenders. Is this the best tour we can have so far? And why is Phil? Who's going to win this thing?
Okay, well, we did a list of contenders for the Tour de France on television before the race started, and the 4 places in the overall classification are the 4 places we said had the most chance. And I think that it's going to be predictable in as much that we know who's going to be on the podium. Well, we know. I think Roglic will be the rider to miss out. Primož, I love the way he rides. He's so competitive. But Evenepoel gets a better feel every day. If you want to know who's going to win, I am going to say that Pogacar, I love this guy's enthusiasm. He loves to race. He smiles at the start. He smiles at the finish. He congratulates Vingegaard like the other day, yesterday, when he beat him. No, I really feel that Vingegaard will get better and better. This is a really tough course, and we haven't started yet. We've got 2 days in the Pyrenees to come in a couple of days' time. We've got our journey through the Alps and back down to Nice. It says a long way to go as far as the race is concerned. We've only lost 8 riders so far, which is not a record, but it's very few riders to get out of the Tour de France at this stage. I think we're going to see a wall of attrition in the mountains, and I think Vingegaard will win.
Oh, that's a big call. You hear it here in the podcast. Thank you, Phil. We could speak hours to you, but we have to share as well with your American public. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you very much indeed.
So that was, of course, Phil Liggett, the legend that is Phil
Liggett.
He is
a legend.
I can't, you know, there's no other words.
No, he's obviously one of the great commentators of cycling, if not the best, that we've seen. 52 Tour de France.
82 years young.
82 years young. But I think in sport in general, he'll go down as one of those iconic commentators, 100%. Those voices that people who aren't big fans of cycling, but they'll say, wow, I just remember listening to the great Phil Liggett.
It's like Murray Walker in Formula One as well. You love or you don't love Formula One or motorsport, but Murray Walker is someone you know just by the tone of the voice. You recognize who Murray Walker was.
You know what sport you're watching
Phil Liggett
or you're not watching.
Is exactly the same, and it's beautiful to see him as well. His love for Africa. I mean, this is what he said, but you and I have chatted to him off mic as well many, many, many times, and it's pretty much the only thing he talks about.
Yeah, he's got some real passions, hasn't he? And that he follows completely outside of cycling. And, you know, I think that's what's kept him young as well and kept him so sort of invigorated all the time. And I can tell you now, I'll be so over it if I'm working at the Tour de France at the age of 82. I don't even want to. The thought of that is just scary.
I was thinking I need to find another passion than cycling then.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the stage coming up on our screens tonight. We're going to an area that you know, you love. It's Pau. This is the finish, of course, starting in Agen as well. So not far from Villeneuve-sur-Lot where the stage finished yesterday. It's going to be an interesting stage, a day for the sprinters as well. And Pau, my second home, is in Pau, if we follow the Tour de France. He's been in the Tour de France, what, 85 times or 75 times?
It's a long time. 75 times. It's in the 70s, yes. It's not the Tour de France if you don't go to Pau.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is. We've stayed there plenty of times. We've had rest days there and of course, starts and finishes. Probably one of the most memorable, I think, for you for sure, and I remember it well, was Julian Alaphilippe winning the individual time trial, doing a skid out when he crossed the line.
And I remember, where was I?
Well, we were both right there.
We were like a meter away from that slide.
It was pretty cool. And he was never going to win that TT that day. It was one of those phenomenal stages. And it's rare that we have a TT in and around Pau. We've had the women's Tour de France farm. Stage finish there as well, so yeah, it's going to be good. But back onto this year's stage, 165, so it's compared to what they've had, it's relatively short. Two category four climbs, but they're nothing, 1.5 kilometers and 1.8 respectively. They're not super steep, 6%, and even if they were, they're only going for 1.5 kilometers. They do come in the back end, but it's not going to make a difference. To me, it really is a day for the sprinters again.
Something, though, in this area which is very unpredictable is the weather. It can be hot, it can be steamy, it can be rainy, it can be windy, it can be stormy. I'm running out of word on E,
well,
but there's a lot of it.
That's it. Look, there's a lot of flat. And you know, for most of the stage, there's only 2,000 metres of climbing for the whole day, so there's not much going on. So you're right. There, if the wind whips up the right way, it's down south generally where we do see, well, I shouldn't say just down south, because around Brittany, of course, they've had crosswinds over the years we've seen, but certainly in this area, as you point out. So it's not a foregone conclusion that a sprinter wins the day, but, you know, all of the weight is geared towards the sprinters. And on paper, I don't think it ever works out this way, but there's potentially 9 sprint days this year. So hence why a lot of the teams have brought at least one guy that's capable of mixing it.
When you're in Pau, generally what's looming after this? It's the Pyrenees.
And you can see them.
you can see them from Pau.
Yeah, Lourdes is, is it 50 kilometres from Pau? I think it is.
Somewhere like this. Yeah.
It is pretty close. So, and of course, from Lourdes, you got the Tourmalet, the Hautacam, you got all the famous mountains. So you're spot on. The mountains are looming and, you know, and what we've been saying, you know, the big and brutal third week of this race.
Is just around the corner, literally. If you look at the finish of that particular stage, again, it's a question I'm asking you when we do a debrief or a preview of a sprint stage. Is it more of a classic kind of sprint, or is it more of a punchy kind of thing? So basically, to make it a Jayco theme, is it more of a Groenewegen kind of sprint, or is it more of a Matthews kind of sprint?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. When you look at the running, it's not a dead straight, well, it is a straight running from only about 500-600 meters. Prior to that, 1.2 kilometers out, there's a sharp left-hand turn, and then they sort of do a bit of a dogleg until they hit the 600 meters to go, and then it's a straight run in. I think it's anyone's sprint, in fact. Okay. I think it suits just about anyone. So from Gurdemay, who's obviously just got great form, Philipson, Cav, even Brian Cocker, you know. So I think it's suited to anyone. And I think what we've seen already this year, the sprinting, the sprinters are pretty evenly matched.
Yeah.
You know, certainly early on in the race they were. I think the element that starts to come into it now is who's healthy? Who's feeling freshest? We're in the belly of the race. We're in the, you know, this is where riders' immune systems start to break down, and sprinters, they're not immune to that, pardon the pun, but this is where, you know, if you're fit, fresh and healthy, you're more motivated, because for the guys that aren't, they just want to get through the day. You know, everything's a bit of a drag. You wake up in the morning, mm-hmm. You don't feel great. You don't want to, you're not sort of looking forward to breakfast.
We talked about it earlier on with Jakobsen.
Yeah.
Jakobsen is, again, one of the big story, and would be one of the riders that are truly missing. Jakobsen at his peak of his form.
Yeah.
Could have done something here in Pau.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, and we've seen it, of course, as we discussed in the peloton. You know, there's a bug going around, which isn't uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the riders are pushing themselves right to the edge here in terms of their immune systems and their physical ability. So, yeah, that's the other thing that'll come into play.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and you know, as we mentioned as well earlier on in this podcast, we are in a prone region, Maka. So what do you think you should have for dinner tonight? I'm going
with prunes.
Yeah, something with prunes. But I'm going, one of the specialty here is a roast pork with prune inside. So you stuff the pork with prunes.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah, sounds good?
It's a bit hot, but I'll do it anyway.
Shall we do that?
Yeah.
Thank you, Maka.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.